Again, we will always take phone calls on the last half of the show. So make sure that you're not shy, because what happens is I may get shy if you get shy, and then we're all going to get shy, and then nobody's going to say anything, and then we'll have dead air. That is the scariest thing for people like Joe McNeil. He does not want dead air. So we have to stir up things. Besides, what if you have something that would really add? You know, not everything's a takeaway. What if you had something that added?
Years and believed what it said, because most of what he said were true. The only trouble was that they didn't tell you the whole truth. They didn't tell you about the elite who control our country and create all these diversions, so we would be squabbling back and forth between Democrats and Republicans and conservatives and liberals without ever really addressing what the real problem is. And the real problem is we have an elite, a group of very, very powerful and wealthy people who believe they have the right to rule, and they do rule in the United States. So next time you read or you hear the people lauding Bill Buckley, and certainly I think I hate to see anybody pass away, but I believe that Bill Buckley betrayed the conservative movement, betrayed his nation, because his loyalty was not to the United States, but to this ethereal dream of a new world order, a new world religion, a new world leader. But, of course, you're never going to hear that elsewhere. Well, with that as the background, we have Mr. William Grieg with us this afternoon or evening, depending upon where you are. And William is certainly the senior editor of the New American Magazine for many years, always one of my favorite writers. And now, since he's not working with them anymore, he's working with other conservative organizations, but truly conservative organizations that are getting the real truth out, not the laundered truth that the establishment CFR Skull and Bones wants you to hear. William Grieg is certainly one of the most exciting writers and commentators we have, and always a pleasure to have him here with us at Radio Liberty. William, thanks very much for coming on board today.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me again. Really appreciate those kind words.
Go right ahead.
I do think that we have to expatiate just a little bit longer on the passing of Mr. Buckley.
Okay.
Because he is somebody I consider to be one of the more significant figures in the history of media. This organ that we call the media, whether you're talking about what used to be called the press and now is referred to more frequently as the media because it involves the electronic media such as radio and television, now the internet and the blogosphere. Buckley was really the first conspicuous conservative media figure, and he was positioned in such a way that he came to define conservatism for about a quarter of a century or so. He was more or less the pontiff of the establishment depicted right. And it's by no means insignificant that he came from a background in the CIA. Not many people are willing to talk about that element of Buckley's background, but it's in all the biographies that have been published by various sources about William F. Buckley. I know that Sam Tannenhaus, the New York Times, is busy writing a biography of Buckley that should be published sometime later this year. It'll be interesting to see how deeply he gets into the background that Mr. Buckley had with the CIA, working in deep cover operations when he was in Mexico for a year back in the early 1950s.
And of course, the CIA, one of their functions is to plant people
exactly.
In the media to filter the news. In other words, most of the news that get out, it's just the important stories that don't get out. And you will never find an article in the National Review, to my knowledge, condemning the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, or Skull and Bones, all of which, of course, Mr. Buckley at one time or another was associated with. We'll be right back.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget, and more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. That's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
If you're a chocolate lover, then now you can use chocolate to get the healthy body you've always wanted. Introducing Coco Pure Chocolate Tea, the most innovative health drink ever, with ingredients connected to a stronger immune system, a healthier heart, and more beautiful skin. Here's nutritional expert Dr. Alex Duarte.
Coco Pure Chocolate Tea blends the nutrition of concentrated cocoa with natural green tea and an extract from red wine. This makes it a triple action supplement with more antioxidant value than most fruits and vegetables. It has a natural energy booster, digestive health boosters, and much more. Best of all, this is probably the most delicious supplement that you're ever going to taste.
Today, you can try Coco Pure Chocolate Tea risk-free. If you don't think this is the most delicious way to get healthy, you can return the empty bottle for your money back. To try Coco Pure, call 1-800-457-9914. Coco Pure will help get your health back on track. Call 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Grigg, and he was simply talking about William Buckley's CIA contacts. Buckley was in the CIA, but nobody talks about that, and of course, as I pointed out, and as William Odom, Lieutenant General William Odom pointed out in his book, Fixing Intelligence, the CIA has journalists or people planted within the media to control the news. And isn't it interesting that Bill Buckley, a CIA agent, suddenly comes out and sets up the National Review magazine that becomes the leading conservative publication, and he spends years, of course, pushing the conservative philosophy, but never telling you the truth about, of course, the people who are really running our country. Why? And, of course, he's certainly not going to be attacking the CIA with his magazine. If he does, it'll certainly not be telling you the real things that they're doing. And so here we see a perfect example of how the CIA works to control the reality of the American people. And with that as a background, William, you pick up the story.
Yeah, we have to talk about that, and the fact that it's so conspicuously not delved into by the establishment-approved journalists who write biographies or critiques of William F. Buckley's career, I think, is very significant. About 21 years ago, actually 31 years ago, 1977, Carl Bernstein, one half of the Woodward and Bernstein pair from Watergate, pointed out that there were something on the order of 400 U.S. journalists who had been employed by the CIA in some capacity or the other, and that ranged from freelancers who were paid as stringers or as contributors to various journals who are regularly debriefed by the CIA, or actual CIA officers who are working under deep cover. You had a person or persons of that sort working for just about every media outlet of any significance. And this is 31 years ago, way back in 1977. And it's interesting, there's another book that just came out. You made mention of William Odom's book. There's another book that just came out called The Mighty Wurlitzer, which goes to some depth of field describing the CIA-created journalistic fronts that were set up at the time that William F. Buckley began his career as a journalist. He came out of Yale. Yale is pretty much the happy hunting ground for CIA talent scouts. They're always looking for Yalies, at least when they got started, when they grew out of the OSS, Bill Donovan's communist-infused intelligence agency during World War II. When the OSS became the CIA, they went to Yale to look for their top echelon prospects. And a lot of the people who went into positions of high trust in the CIA came out of the Skull and Bones Society. And, of course, Mr. Buckley was a bonesman. He was somebody who had experience living abroad, and he had foreign language experience, which is something the CIA officers, or rather CIA recruiters, look for. He had lived in Mexico. His first language was Spanish. His second language was French. The reason why he spoke with that somewhat stilted, affected English accent was because he had a governess who taught him English after he had learned Spanish and French to begin with. And so when he went to Mexico as a deep cover CIA agent, it'd be interesting to find out what he was doing in Mexico exactly. He was there for about a year. And that's about all he'll own up to in terms of his formal association with the CIA. But I proceed on the assumption that if a person is a CIA agent, he's pretty much in it for life. Once a spook, always a spook, as far as I can tell. Particularly when somebody excels at deep cover operations. And we know that when he was at Yale, Wilmore Kendall, who was a Trotskyite Marxist and also had CIA connections, was Mr. Buckley's patron at Yale. So there's some really deep and lasting contacts of that sort between Mr. Buckley and the whole foundation, the whole matrix controlled by the CIA. And it's also interesting that in the early 1950s, you had journals like Encounter magazine and various so-called congresses of writers and journalists that were set up as front groups by the CIA. And most of them were of an internationalist, vaguely leftist leaning, whereas you would have to have some kind of a dialectical counterpart in order to cover the full spectrum of the political playing field. And so it stands to reason that the CIA would look around and try to find somebody to set up a company-controlled conservative movement, conservative journal. And here's this individual who's trained in deep cover operations. He's a Yalie. He's a Bonesman. His patron at Yale had been a CIA player, Mr. Kendall. And so when he started National Review in 1956, I contend that it's probably smart to assume, as a working hypothesis and nothing else, that National Review was intended to be the so-called right-wing dialectical counterpoint to leftist journals like Encounter that were controlled by the CIA. That way they covered the entire spectrum. And it's interesting as well that one of the very first things that Buckley did before he created the National Review back in 1956, which always ran at a loss, by the way, was always being subsidized by someone. They were losing money by hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. The New York Times obituary today says that in addition to subscriptions and advertisements that they sold in order to make money for the journal, that it was subsidized by, I guess, the Buckley family and by donations from readers, which, of course, is true, but you can't run a magazine with the type of deficits National Review was running unless it's being subsidized by somebody. We don't know who that would be, but, of course, there's a three-letter agency that has all kinds of fronts and assets that are deniable for the purpose of running operations of that sort. So, once again, there's a very logical inference we could have with respect to the Daddy Warbucks behind National Review. But even before he started National Review, way back in 1952, as a nobody from any practical point of view. Mr. Buckley was extolling the idea of big centralized government. He wrote a notorious essay for Commonweal magazine in which he said the following, and I'm quoting now from Buckley, "We have to accept big government for the duration, for neither an offensive nor a defensive war can be waged except through the instrument of a totalitarian bureaucracy within our shores." And toward the end of confronting the Soviet Union, in order to confront the Soviet Union, Buckley wrote, "We must endorse the extensive and productive tax laws that are needed to support a vigorous anti-communist foreign policy, including large armies and air forces, atomic power, central intelligence, war production boards, and the attendant centralization of power in Washington, even with Truman at the reins of it all." So wrote Mr. Buckley in Commonweal from January 25th of 1952.
Right, but it's what's really so interesting about that, William, is the fact that at the same time we were arming ourselves to protect ourselves from the wicked communists, we were financing the communists,
yeah,
directly or indirectly, so we'd have an enemy, so we could rally the people behind the government and people like William Buckley and the CIA to protect us from the wicked communists who had created and continued to finance, and who we are still financing to this very day, which is
exactly
so incredible. Go right ahead.
Well, it's interesting as well that one of the people who challenged the assumption that the Soviet Union was this vast behemoth that couldn't be brought down except through the creation of a totalitarian bureaucracy and this immense military-industrial complex. One of the people who challenged that was Murray Rothbard, the late Murray Rothbard. And when he died in 1995, Mr. Buckley went out of his way to execrate Murray Rothbard, to talk about how he was, if you will, sort of the political equivalent of David Koresh, the leader of the Branch Davidians. And Mr. Buckley was always in the habit of writing these incredibly ungenerous obituaries for people you wouldn't expect to have merited such treatment. I mean, he was conspicuously generous in talking about people like Theodore White, the liberal writer for Time magazine. He was very generous in talking about a number of people. About the only leftist he really doesn't have a whole lot of patience for was Gore Vidal. And that's because Gore Vidal didn't like Buckley at all, and during their stint as joint commentators of the 1968 Democratic National Convention, Vidal got under Buckley's skin to the point where Buckley threatened to beat his face in there on live television. I think that's the only person who's ever succeeded in penetrating the mask of serene erudition that was Mr. Buckley's standard demeanor. But the thing is, when you had genuine conservatives, whether they were people like Murray Rothbard, people like Robert Welch, who founded the John Birch Society, other people such as Frank Chodorov, who talked about the idea of trying to bring about a normalization of our situation with the government reduced to its constitutional role, to decentralize power and to refrain from getting involved in an interventionist foreign policy abroad, Mr. Buckley would go after those people hammer and tongs, because that was his raison d'etre. I contend that he was put where he was for the purpose of promoting a post-constitutional conservatism. He created a type of conservatism which the Constitution, for all effects and purposes, didn't exist. I mean, we talk about the so-called Enlightenment era of the 1700s, 1800s, the philosophy that came out of the Enlightenment era as the belief that we can organize the world as if God didn't exist. That was sort of the idea that animated people like Voltaire and Diderot, folks of that sort. Well, in the same sense, you could say that Buckley, his conservative enlightenment, his great innovation was to try to organize conservatism as if the Constitution didn't exist, and as if it had nothing to do with how government would exercise its powers or the powers that government would have. If you start from the premise that in order to deal with some kind of a historic emergency, the government has to have totalitarian powers over the lives of American citizens, where can you go from there? But in the direction of building up that very totalitarian edifice in the name of supposedly defeating a totalitarian threat from abroad. And so in order to defeat the communists, Mr. Buckley's approach was to say that we should create our own version of totalitarian socialism. And there were many conservatives who said, well, I think we can do a little bit better than that. And so Buckley spent the first 15 to 20 years of his career as the establishment-anointed pontiff of conservatism, issuing writs of excommunication, expelling from the ranks of polite conservatism people like Murray Rothbard and Ayn Rand and of course Robert Welch and the John Birch Society as apostates from this new order of totalitarian conservatism. And unfortunately, it's Buckley's vision of conservatism that prevails today, as I think it was intended to.
I think you're absolutely right, and it's interesting how similarly we feel, even though we hadn't had a chance to discuss this before. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with William Grigg, but you're not going to hear this discussed. Certainly, Rush Limbaugh spent the first hour of his program today extolling the virtues of William Buckley, who, according to Rush Limbaugh, was really his mentor and taught him what he knew about conservatism, made him the conservative he is today. And as I always like to say, Rush is the best conservative that money could buy. We'll be right back.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are reclaimable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack for only $99 or a four-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929. How much are you willing to lose? Take action now. Call me at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. I believe that we are facing a financial catastrophe of biblical proportion. Over recent decades, numerous economic systems have failed. Current Federal Reserve policy and uncontrolled government spending have set the stage for the United States to be the next target. Secure your assets today by calling 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. Do this while paper can still buy gold. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
This is Elizabeth Border, author of the two books set, America Attacked and Chaos and Chemtrails. I wrote these books because I believe that every American should have the vital chemtrails research info. I was much heartened and encouraged when a radio listener recently wrote me, quote, "You are truly a great writer, so clear and powerful and thorough in your communication. You have the strength to forge ahead in the midst of darkness, and you also believe in the power of goodness and truth." I hope you listeners will order these crucial books. Send your check for $32 post-pay to Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. $32 to Radio Liberty, Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. Or call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is William Grigg. And William, go right ahead.
Buckley.
William, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you certainly go right ahead.
When you talk about Mr. Buckley's influence on the media, it's important to point out that a lot of his influence has to do with a program that he started back in the mid-60s called Firing Line. And I think that this is a really good illustration of the post-constitutional nature of Mr. Buckley's conservatism. Firing Line was produced through and broadcast by the public broadcasting system, PBS. Public broadcasting is not a constitutionally authorized function of the federal government. You really don't have any constitutional provision that permits the government of the United States, the federal government, to create a taxpayer-subsidized foundation for the purpose of doing public broadcasting. It's constitutionally impermissible. It is completely unnecessary, particularly now when we have such a profusion of media outlets. And yet Mr. Buckley is the supposed, as the supposed doyen of conservatism, made his big mark on the public by means of this public broadcasting television program called Firing Line. It's also interesting when you take a look at what he occupied his time with during the last couple of decades of his life. He was at his best a very good columnist, but by no means the best in that field. If you take a look at some of the columnists who are writing today, some of them have gone through Mr. Buckley's sphere of influence. I think the finest political journalist of our time as an essayist, not as a reporter, but as an essayist, is Joseph Sobran. And Sobran was fired by National Review back in, I think it was 1992, and the chief bone of contention between Sobran and Buckley was Mr. Sobran's opposition to the first Gulf War. There were a number of accusations leveled at Joseph Sobran that he was an anti-Semite, that he hates Jewish people and wanted various forms of harm to come to people as Jews because they were Jews. None of that's true. None of it's ever been demonstrated to the satisfaction of rational people. And Mr. Sobran bears no individual any ill will that I can think of. I've had the pleasure of meeting with him on a couple of occasions and talking with him extensively, and I found that he's a genuine Christian gentleman. And nonetheless, because of his opposition to the first Gulf War, he eventually lost his job there at National Review. He's a far better writer than Mr. Buckley as a columnist. But when Buckley was on his game, he was a good and diverting columnist. He was a speaker, a debater, somebody who spent a lot of time every year crisscrossing the country delivering speeches. But during the last 10 or 15 or 20 years of his life, what occupied most of his time was writing novels. And what I thought was really interesting is that toward the end of his career as a novelist, I think he finished his last novel a couple of years ago, Buckley wrote a series of revisionist treatments of various historical events. He wrote a novel about the Nuremberg trials, for instance, that wasn't half bad. Of Buckley's novels, I think that was probably the best of them. He wrote a book that was a revisionist treatment of Joseph McCarthy that was completely irresponsible. Given the fact that he started out his career as a conservative defending McCarthy, he ended his career assailing McCarthy. And the facts hadn't changed in the interim. What had changed, I think, was Mr. Buckley's priorities or the mission that was assigned to him. I don't know which is true, but it could be one, it could be both. But McCarthy was somebody who has been vindicated in almost every of the public charges that he made. He did nothing exceptional in terms of the use of the subcommittee he headed up in the Senate. The one thing that I would say, actually there are two things I'd say by way of criticizing McCarthy, the first of which is that his voting record was really liberal. He was a big supporter of agricultural subsidies, particularly for the dairy industry. He was from Wisconsin, after all. And the second one was that he didn't understand the wisdom expressed by Frank Chodorov with respect to the communist infestation of the public bureaucracy. What Chodorov said was that if you find a bureaucracy full of communists, you do away with the bureaucracy. And that never occurred to Mr. McCarthy, unfortunately. But Buckley started out defending McCarthy in the 1950s. By the 1990s, he had joined the chorus condemning McCarthy. And then he wrote another book, the title of which I won't name, that was basically his revenge, I guess you would say, against the John Birch Society for the crime of surviving Buckley's attempt to kill it back in the 1960s. And as a novelist, of course, Mr. Buckley controlled every element of the universe he was creating. And by appending the apparatus of scholarship to some of his novels, such as footnotes and endnotes and various types of scholarly affectations, Mr. Buckley wanted his novels to be taken as if you will, sort of a Ramana Clef, sort of a treatment of history that's to be taken as a sober and credible recreation of what happened, as opposed to the eccentric views of somebody with definite personal interests at stake.
Well, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Whitney Grigg, and I think it's important that we understand that certainly Mr. Buckley was one of the leaders of the conservative movement. But, of course, the tragedy is so many of the leaders of the conservative movement are not conservatives at all. They're part of the establishment, leading us to our own destruction. We'll be right back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at murkywater.com.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and with us is William Grigg. And before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog and how they can get your book.
Well, with respect to the latter, I've been in touch with, once again, my associates at the Wells Foundation, and I'm confident that this week you should be getting the books to carry there at Radio Liberty after a long and unfortunate delay that I suppose reflects as much on my own rather cluttered schedule as any other factor. And with respect to my blog is entitled Pro Libertate. That's a Latin phrase that means for freedom. And if you want to go to it directly, you go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Once again, it's one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you could go to the website maintained by the Wells Foundation, a news portal called The Right Source. And the address there is a lot easier to remember, I think, www.rightsourceonline.com. That's once again one word, rightsourceonline.com. And if you go to that front page of the Right Source from the Welsh Foundation, at the top of the page you'll find a banner advertisement for my new book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can order it there by way of PayPal directly from the Welsh Foundation. And if you want to find my blog, just scroll down about a third of the way down the page. Look at the left-hand border of your screen. You'll see my photograph, and there'll be a hyperlink which will take you to my blog, Pro Libertate.
Okay, very good. And I'll tell you, it's an excellent blog. In fact, I don't know whether you know, William, but certainly I go every morning to the World Affairs Brief put up by good friend Joel Skousen. And I noticed that he's been carrying a lot of your blog articles.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
So, you know, so it's getting a lot of coverage that way.
Well, terrific. I'm honored to know that that's the case. Well, with respect to Mr. Buckley again, I had been mentioning previous to the break that we have a series of books that were put out just in the last 10 or 12 years, novels written by Mr. Buckley that were sort of revisionist takes on various historical personalities and developments. And I'd mentioned his last novel of consequence, which is entitled Getting It Right. And Getting It Right was meant to be a work of history. As a matter of fact, I'd mentioned Sam Tannenhaus before. Mr. Tannenhaus is a friend of Mr. Buckley's, and he's working on a biography of Buckley that will be published later this year. Tannenhaus has written a great deal about the Alger Hiss-Whitaker-Chambers confrontation, and he wrote a blurb, that is to say a jacket endorsement for the book Getting It Right, in which he described this novel. This is a work of fiction, remember, as, and I'm quoting now, a major contribution to the historiography of post-war American conservatism. And then Tannenhaus talked about how Buckley dealt with what he called the emergence of, quote, two symmetrical extremist forces depicted vividly here in the characters of Robert Welch and Ayn Rand. And Tannenhaus said that the what he described as the unintended interlocking collaboration between the JBS, the John Birch Society, and libertarianism as inspired by Ayn Rand looked for a time as if it might pitch the right into permanent oblivion. Instead, the crisis was met and mastered into a mature, nuanced conservative movement. Now, that's pretty much how Mr. Buckley wants to be remembered. You know, he was the savior of respectable conservatism by banishing to the hinterlands everybody who didn't accept the idea that government should have totalitarian powers to protect us from foreign enemies of its own creation. And that means, of course, that to the hinterlands, to the so-called fever swamps, must go such people as the libertarians of every stripe, whether they're people who are primarily inspired by Murray Rothbard or people who follow Ayn Rand, people who look to Robert Welch and his insights regarding the power elite running our country and the moral values that we have to uphold in order to have ordered liberty. You know, people like that have to be pitched out to the wastelands as well, because they believe that a lot of what's going on in current events reflect the machinations of people in our own government who are seeking to accumulate power through conspiratorial means. And that's, of course, a perspective on American government that's at least as old as the 1700s. If you go back and read what the American colonists were saying about the not only the British government, but also the people who were presiding over the colonies, who were colonial governors and so forth. I mean, they had pretty much the same suspicions and the same justified misgivings about their government that contemporary conservatives of, if you will, the Birchite stripe have to say about the government that rules us right now. But people of that sort had to be cast out as well, because you had to have a more mature and nuanced understanding of what's going on, which means that, for instance, if we see our government through the CIA funding socialist movements in places like Italy and Yugoslavia and other places in war-torn post-World War II Europe, well, that's something that we just have to do, because you have to understand these people really understand the elaborate bank shots that are necessary in order to defeat communism, and sometimes that means you have to go out and fund Marxist groups. You know, and sometimes you have to go out and fund radical anti-American Muslim forces in Afghanistan and elsewhere. In order to fight the Soviet Union, you have to go out and find exactly the worst and most envenomed critics of the United States in order to do that, and cultivate those elements in order to bring about the triumph in the Cold War. And that's how we ended up with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. You know, that was something brought to us by Mr. Buckley's friends, the CIA. And then the other novel I think is worth mentioning here in this context, another attempt by Mr. Buckley to use a novel to recast history in a way congenial to his point of view, was called Spy Hunter, which was about James Jesus Angleton, and that is how his name was pronounced. It wasn't pronounced Jesus. And Mr. Angleton, as it happens, was from Boise, Idaho, which is only about 45 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And he was the head of counterintelligence at the CIA. And he was controversial for his assumption, his belief, that the primary thrust of the KGB, the Soviet Intelligence Service, was strategic deception as opposed to active intelligence, that it was trying to use a feedback mechanism within our own government to manipulate public opinion in a way that would eventually bring about a merger between the United States and the Soviet Union on communist terms. And the reason why Mr. Angleton was so adamant about this was because he was the one who debriefed Anatoly Golitsyn, who defected to the United States in 1961, and Mr. Golitsyn had been involved in planning this campaign of strategic deception. Now, most of the predictions, I mean, something on the order of 67 or 70%, if I remember correctly, made by Mr. Golitsyn have been vindicated, have been validated. And Mr. Golitsyn, knowing Mr. Buckley's background in the CIA, went to Buckley in the 1970s with a draft of his book, New Lies for Old. And Buckley, of course, threw him out of his living room in Sharon, Connecticut, because he didn't want to have, Sharon, Connecticut. He was in Connecticut in any case. Mr. Buckley threw him out of his living room because Golitsyn had the thesis that this great liberalization of the former Soviet Union was essentially a vast charade, that the same people would retain power in the Soviet Union, and that the eventual result of this staged phony collapse of the Soviet Union would be a merger between the United States and post-Soviet Russia on terms favorable to socialism. He was saying all these things in the late 70s and early 80s when the supposed liberalizer was Yuri Andropov, the former head of the KGB. And now we have post-Soviet Russia under Vladimir Putin, who's another former head of the KGB or former high-ranking officer in the KGB. And you see how they're considered strategic partners of the United States in spite of the fact that the same people are running Russia today that were running it when it was the Soviet Union 15 or 16 years ago. And Buckley, of course, was given the opportunity because Golitsyn didn't fully understand who Buckley was and what his true priorities were. Buckley was given the opportunity to spike for a while Mr. Golitsyn's expose of what the KGB was really up to. And so I think that is, once again, a very important illustration of Mr. Buckley's true significance in terms of his intelligence background, but also the fact that he went out of his way to write a novel so as to get the last word and to recast history in a way that would make him the hero and make those he was collaborating to suppress into the villains. I think that tells you something about Mr. Buckley's personality and about the kind of a person he really was. I know we're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but when you've lived a life as public and as conspicuous as Mr. Buckley and made such a habit of using obituaries in order to get your last digs in at somebody who's had a long-standing argument with you, I think there's a different standard that applies here in composing our own eulogies for the man.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think that it's important that people understand that he was playing a part, and this is these people affiliated with the CIA. But it's not simply the CIA, because the CIA merges with the CFR, with the skull and bones, with this whole world occult movement. And until people really understand the spiritual forces that are manipulating the CIA and the CFR and the skull and bones, and understand the CFR is simply a front for a group known as the Round Table, which is a front for the Association of Helpers, which was a front for Cecil Rhodes' secret society created back in 1891. We know it was created because one of the people who was there actually came forward and admitted what it was all about in his diary and in his writings. And so there's no question exactly what happened. And Professor Quigley tells us so much of that in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. But, of course, there is other material out there which we have, which we've accumulated through the years. And, of course, there was a secret society. It was dedicated to creating a world government. And, of course, as you begin to see who was in it, these people were all affiliated with the occult. So go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Buckley's connections to the CFR at the time of his death were decades old, and the fact that he'd been involved in the Skull and Bones, the Order of Skull and Bones, is also important, because the Skull and Bones has to be considered an occultic group. But one of the things that you find in Buckley's career is that he always had a way of taking really outre leftist propositions and finding some way of translating them into an idiom that would make them acceptable to rank-and-file conservatives. For instance, with respect to the United Nations, way back in the early 1960s, after National Review got started, when the John Birch Society got started in 1958, and some other organizations were criticizing the United Nations as being effectively a communist front and suggesting that the United States should get out of the United Nations. And what Mr. Buckley did was he made a great show of embracing the anger, the angry reaction to the United Nations, and embracing those who were angered by what the United Nations was doing, and talking about all these horrible things that the UN was doing, while at the same time saying that, well, we're not anti-UN as such, we're opposed to the perversion of the United Nations into a communist instrument, and what we do support is the United Nations as it was intended to work originally. You know, he found some way of saying that the United Nations could somehow be turned into an instrument of sound American policy. And I guess from his perspective, he could say he was being honest, because once again, if his opening bid is totalitarianism, then there's really no other place to go. But that's a really good example of how Buckley controlled the dialectic, or used the dialectic to control the public conversation about certain issues. And then by the early 1970s, he was appointed by Nixon, I think, to be part of the U.S. delegation to the United Nations. You see that happening time and time again with various subjects. With respect to the issue of forced desegregation of the South, many conservatives opposed the use of federal power forcibly to desegregate the South. Many people who were appalled by the treatment of black citizens in the various states when they were being treated as second-class citizens, and impediments were being thrown up to prevent them from voting or from conducting various types of economic transactions. And they said, no, this simply cannot work, and we have, you know, these things have to be changed. People of good faith have to use whatever moral suasion, moral force they have to compel these people to change. But you can't use the federal government to intervene, because the federal system does not permit Washington to intervene to rearrange the various institutions in these states. And that's a very important issue with respect to the reserve rights of the states under the Constitution. Now, Mr. Buckley made a point of embracing that policy for 4 or 5 years, then he turned on a dime, and he came out in favor of a whole host of federal interventions within the states, found a way of justifying this, rather than being a matter of expediency, justifying this as being part of this mature and nuanced conservatism that Tannen House extols. And then by the 1980s, he was talking about how conservatives really ought to embrace the message of Martin Luther King and extol Martin Luther King as an exemplar of the best American values, rather than having proper reservations about the role that Martin Luther King, whatever you think of the man as an individual, the role that he played in destroying federalism, which is the real issue that most conservatives have against Martin Luther King. It wasn't the man himself so much as the role that he played in abetting the federal intrusion into the reserved powers of the states, and we're left now with this legacy of so-called civil rights laws that effectively federalized the entire criminal code and the entire regulatory apparatus of the country. And Buckley played a role once again in setting the dials and tuning the conversational atmosphere to make this triumph of the unitary state possible.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting. What he would do is he would take a position that everybody would agree with. Uh-huh. And that everybody would fall in step behind him, because he was leading the way. And then, of course, when he turned, as you say, on a dime and suddenly going the other direction, Everybody dutifully followed him. This is a standard technique. It's been used over and over again. It's like Ronald Reagan, you know, who's totally against, you know, big government and high taxes and large deficits. I mean, he was totally against all of those things. And he said everything we believed. But look at his record. He gave us the biggest tax increase in history. Mm-hmm. He gave us the biggest deficit in history. You know, he expanded the government more than anybody else had ever done before that. And but because we all loved Ronald Reagan, we went right along with it.
Yeah, and in addition to those medicines that Mr. Reagan conferred upon our republic, or what's left of our republic, we also have a couple of little Easter eggs that we had to open up a little bit later, such as, of course, the radical Islamic movement that was nurtured by the CIA under Ronald Reagan's watch in Afghanistan and elsewhere, that's now being used, of course, as this totemic evil that is being employed to rally the country behind another round of totalitarian centralization of power here in the United States. You know, Mr. Reagan was probably the most prominent subscriber to the new National Review in the 1970s and 1980s, and when they had their 50th anniversary, no, it wasn't the 50th, their 30th anniversary back in 1985, 1986, Reagan was the keynote speaker there, and he talked about how Bill Buckley was his guiding intellectual light, in the same way that Rush Limbaugh today was talking about Bill Buckley as his mentor, taught him everything that he needed to know about being a conservative media personality. I think they're being exactly right. They're being completely candid in describing Mr. Buckley that way. Mr. Buckley was the first celebrity conservative, and now the country is lousy with celebrity conservatives. Almost all of them extolling the principle of the Republican Party uber alle, and talking about the accumulation of power being a dangerous and damnable thing, unless, of course, that power is being accumulated by Republicans. I mean, you have to make sure that the power remains in the right hands, the proper hands, meaning Republican hands, and Republicans of only their particular stripe. You know, Ron Paul Republicans need not apply.
We're out of time with him. We'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow evening, and I guess Friday evening, I'm sorry.
All right.
Certainly, but thank you so very much. I think that I hope we got our listeners thinking. Nothing as it appears to be. Bye-bye.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case of a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I always enjoy William. I had no idea this what we're going to be talking about this hour, but I think it was very apropos. You have to understand that the invisible government, the spiritual hierarchy, is really, they're awfully smart. So they create the conservative, liberal, right, left, Democrat, Republican conflict, and we have us arguing back and forth all the time. And, of course, there are a lot of people on the left who are really very concerned about freedom, and they feel that ever-expanding the power of government is only going to take away our freedom, and they are absolutely right. You have to understand we're moving towards a police state. We've got a great new talk. It's called The Planned Police State. It's available on DVD. The Planned Police State, we recommend you get it. You'll actually see the footage that comes from the Iran-Contra hearings when Congressman Jack Brooks tries to bring out the fact that under the Reagan administration, Oliver North was working on a plan to suspend the Constitution and round up Americans and put them into concentration camps. And, of course, we have that footage elsewhere in the amazing clips or in the sampler available from Radio Liberty. You can see that we have a four-tape set on the concentration camps. We have a DVD called America Behind Barbed Wire. And then, of course, we have the other items that we've talked about. We have the amazing clips. It's about 3 hours. You can get it by itself, but they're really amazing clips. And here again, you'll see that footage from the Iran-Contra hearings where, and then Congressman Henry Gonzalez, longtime, you know, chairman of the House Banking Committee, saying, yes, there really is a plan in case of a national emergency to round up American citizens and put them in concentration camps. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, in this last week, they signed an agreement so that they can now bring Canadian troops into the United States to police us. Do you know that they can bring their professional mercenaries, their hired killers, into America to police us in case of civilian unrest? Do you know that there, really all throughout the world there's a growing food shortage, and the United Nations even talking about the necessity of rationing food? This just came out yesterday. Tremendous food shortages, and of course the whole monetary system is collapsing. There are almost 8 million Americans who may lose their homes. They have questionable loans, and then of course we have got an awful lot of other people who have loans on their homes. And what happens if they lose their job, or what happens if they have a pension, a state pension, and the state just can't pay that pension? What happens to these people? What happens to their homes? There's going to be civilian unrest. They're planning on it. They'll be fomenting this. Believe me, they'll be doing everything they can to get the people out rioting so that they can justify rounding people up and putting them into concentration camps. Let me suggest either the video, America Behind Barbed Wire, or the concentration camp four-tape set, or the concentration camp special that contains that and so much more. Let me suggest our talk on the planned police state. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then you need to get my book. You need to get it out. You need, this is Brotherhood of Darkness, explains to you the spiritual forces behind the scenes. You need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. You need, that's available on DVD. You need to get the four tape or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. You need to get the 4-CD or 4-tape set, the Supernatural, my interviews with Johanna Michelson, and then, of course, well, if you'd like a free catalog, we'd be glad to send it to you, or you can get a free catalog or a health catalog or an emergency food catalog, and
you better start stocking up, because believe me, the price of grains and all the things, of the fruits and the dried eggs and the milk and dairy products, all the things you're going to need to survive, they're all going up. They're getting increasingly difficult to get for the people who are actually, you know, putting out this food, ready reserve food, which we work with. So our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like an emergency food catalog or a health catalog or a regular catalog. Incidentally, we've got all of them on a great CD. We'll be glad to send you free of charge. And if you want a newsletter, fine. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Listen to our programs. Encourage others to listen. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, and we're losing.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order.
Of the Bilderberger Group. Daniel, are you there?
I'm here, sir. Thank you so much for having me. Good day.
Well, have they been really running ragged back there on press conferences and television, etc.?
We have, and this is the last one, and tomorrow I'm off back home.
All right, fine. Well, first of all, Daniel lives in Spain. He's written this book, and of course it's based upon, what, about 12 years of research of the Bilderbergers?
Exactly.
So how did it happen that you really got interested in studying this group and then writing about them?
In 1992, a friend of a friend who was a former agent of the KGB got in touch with me because he was in trouble. He was a double agent. Actually, I think he was a triple agent. And I think he was found out. His cover was blown somehow, and he needed help. And the man he was actually looking for was my grandfather, who was at the time was a very old man. He lived to be 98 years young, and he died in 1996 or 1997, I believe. So he was very, very old at the time, but he still thought that, you know, through my grandfather, he could get in touch with his people and somehow save this man's life. And he spoke to me about this group called the Builder something or other, and I had no idea what he was talking about. I was way over my head, but way, way over my head. He showed me documents, Henry Kissinger and Nixon and the secret meetings of how they killed President Kennedy. And I thought I was living in Alice in Wonderland parallel world universe. Anyway, the meeting ended. I had no idea what he was talking about. He disappeared. And then I thought to myself, well, you know, I just look into this thing because, you know, I thought it was a great way to pick up girls in buyer's telegram, you know, the 007 James Bond-like stories. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized there was a lot of truth to what this man said. And sooner rather than later, that's about 1995, this parallel universe became my world, and I became the shadow dancer, as they called me for so many years, you know, dancing between raindrops and disappearing at the first sight of danger. And that's basically how I got into this amazing story which became a lifelong quest called The Quest for the Bilderberger Group.
Well, I'm glad that you took on that quest and that you set out to research this. But anyway, this gentleman from the KGB was certainly well aware of what was going on, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my grandfather did tell me quite a few things before he died. But again, I think the Bilderbergers were something that eluded even him. And so when this man spoke to me about this secret organization, I needless to say did not believe him, because I think most people believe the world to be as it is, with a few people doing illegal things here and there. But generally speaking, governments run the government. You know, the politicians do their thing. You know, the courts protect our rights. You know, the business elite try to steal our money, but there's always somebody out there who is there, you know, to blow their cover. And basically, that's how the world works. Unfortunately, that's not the case. That's one of the things I discover or uncover in my book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, about how the world really runs and who's behind the curtain.
And I think that is really so very important. Now, did your family come from Russia originally?
That's right. We're from the Soviet Union. My father was born in St. Petersburg. My mother is from White Russia, Belarus. We are what is known as White Russians, people who were not for the Tsar, who did not support the Bolsheviks, who believed in the Constitution as the ultimate law of the land. We're what's known in Russia as the Cadets, Constitutional Democrats. And my great-grandfather belonged to the Cadet Party, whose members were also Milyukov, Kerensky, Vladimir Nabokov's father. So again, Constitutional Democrats. And I do exactly the same thing with the United States. I support the American Constitution as the highest law of the land.
Well, we appreciate that. And, of course, Daniel is a Canadian citizen living in Spain. We're going to be right back in a moment or two as we will tell us this incredible, incredible story. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And Daniel lives in Spain, but he has written a book entitled The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. And, of course, the book has sold millions of copies in Europe. When they try to get it published in America, because of the degree of control over the publishing industry here, why there was, nobody would take the book, and the only person who was really published it was a friend of ours, Chris Milligan, who we've had on here many times. But was this sort of a surprise to you, Daniel, when you realized that the media here in America was so controlled that none of the major publishers would even consider taking your book?
Well, I pretty much knew that was going to be the case. I mean, we went through the motions of getting it published. In fact, we had a very good deal, quite a lucrative deal, in fact, with a major publishing company. I can't name them, at least that's what my lawyers tell me in public. But, you know, they bought the rights, paid the rights, and then somebody upstairs in the executive suite found out that this book, the Bilderberger book, is about to be published by the same people who belong to the Bilderberg Club. And lo and behold, the editor who bought the rights gets fired, or he leaves the company. He basically just dropped out of sight. And then as of that day, nobody wanted to know anything about it, and we were forced to look for another publisher. And thank God we found Chris Milligan of Trine Day. This is a very, very brave man, and I hope he publishes a lot of books, because he's doing a world of good, and he's certainly one of the few people out there in the United States who still believes in the freedom of the press in the Fourth Estate.
Well, did they actually give you some of the money that they promised you then?
Well, they gave us some of the money, not all of it, but then, you know, we knew that it would cost us more money to actually fight them in court and get the rest of it. We just kind of, but again, it's a wonderful story. I had no illusions about getting the book published by a big publisher, because again, one of the things I document in my book are how all the biggest media corporations, the ABCs, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the NBCs, etc. of this world, how they're all interlocked with so many other foundations controlled by the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, etc., etc. So I pretty much knew what to expect, but I didn't realize just to what extent until I came a couple of weeks ago to the United States to do the promotion in the United States and in Canada, just to what degree the entire American press, corporate media, is controlled from top to bottom by very, very few men, as I call them, the men behind the curtain, who really do control the power and who control the media and who control the politicians, etc., etc. And then, you know, through the media, you can control the politicians and the business elite. The ones you have that, you have the monopoly, and that's what people like David Rockefeller like so much. That's why they love communism.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Great.
Here.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Daniel was just saying that although the book had been widely circulated throughout Europe, when they came to the United States, only one publisher would of course accept the book. And then, of course, when somebody and the management found out what was happened, the editor who purchased the book was fired. Daniel received some compensation, but certainly they had no intention of allowing this book to be circulated in America. Why? Because they don't want the American people to know about the Bilderberger Group or how powerful it is. And although the organization has existed since 1953, it is only within the last about 2 years there has been any mention of this in one or two of the major publications. Prior to that, totally blocked out by the people who control our reality. So, Daniel, what have you found about the Bilderberger? Who are the Bilderbergers? Why should we be concerned about their influence over our lives?
Well, first of all, let me tell you what they're not. Bilderberger, they're not a Jewish Masonic conspiracy, although many people on the Internet believe them to be Jews or Masons. Some of them are. Some of them are Christians, Catholics, Protestants. You know, you have a few pedophiles thrown in there as well for good measure. You have a few homosexuals. But generally speaking, they're not a Jewish Masonic conspiracy. Neither are they the Illuminati conspiracy, whatever the heck that is, as so many people, again, claim on the Internet with very fragile logic to back it up. And finally, Bilderberg is not a monolith, meaning that no group of people, I don't care how powerful they are, sit around a table in a dark room holding hands, staring at a crystal ball, planning our future. Bilderberg is what I call the aristocracy of purpose. It's the NATO alliance, Europe, the United States, and Canada, who for the last 53 years, since 1954, have come together to jointly manage the well-being, quote-unquote, for their sake, obviously, of the planet, natural resources, the people, everything that moves, walks, crawls, or breathes, or flies in the universe. According to them, that's there. So again, it's the aristocracy of purpose between the North Americans and the Europeans. There are two things involved in the Bilderbergers' interests as far as they're concerned. One is the money supply. Of course, they're all money people. But money ultimately becomes worthless unless there's energy to go around. So over the last 25 years or so, the number one issue at every Bilderberger conference has been the energy reserves and energy supplies. And again, oil and money, these are the two principal issues which guide most, if not all, of their interests.
And these really are the richest bankers. These are the people who control the central banks and the corporations and the governments. And they're really, of course, the movers and shaker of both the United States and the Western Hemisphere and Europe.
Well, just to appreciate exactly what we're dealing with here, Bilderberg, the annual conferences attract somewhere between 120 and 130 members, out of which 50-60, these are your regular invitees. People have been coming for years, if not decades, such as David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski, for example. And then you have another 50-60 who come invited once a year. They have, you know, the Bilderbergers have a look at them. If they like them, they bring them back. If they don't, they discard them like an old shoe. But just, you know, to give an idea of what power we deal with, every president of a European country, United States and Canada, is member of the Bilderberg Club. The United States president normally never comes while in office because every minute of his time is accounted for, but he always is well represented by his representatives, people such as Richard Holbrooke or Douglas Feith or Zbigniew Brzezinski or Henry Kissinger, one of the people who come in and out of government, so these are their representatives. Every central banker of every European nation is there as well. President of International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, all European commissioners come, 100 top CEOs of leading international multinational corporations such as Citigroup, Chase Manhattan Bank, BP, Shell, Texaco, Merck, Boeing, etc., Mercedes-Benz. And with them at the same table sit all of the representatives of the European royalty. And finally, they are joined by the leading representatives of the media elite of the Western world, people from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Le Monde from France, Grupo Prisa from Spain, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, The Economist, etc. Again, this is one of the reasons we have or might not have ever heard of the Bilderbergers. And if we think about it for a minute, if one of these people, for example, David Rockefeller, travels anywhere around the world, he carries a throng of over 100 reporters who report of his comings and goings. Now, when you get all of these people powerful people who collectively control about 85% of the world's wealth in one room. There's no one in the entire world, for the exception of myself and this man by the name of Jim Tucker, who are out there pursuing these people, trying to get to the bottom of what they're doing behind closed doors during their annual Bilderberger secret meetings.
And, of course, we've talked to Jim Tucker. He was an old line of a reporter. I think he worked for 30 or 40 years in the media until he retired and went to work for the Spotlight. And suddenly he's discovered that there was this group, this secret group that was holding secret and clandestine meetings. And so Jim Tucker has been tracking them for many years, and apparently Daniel works very closely with Jim. And they, of course, then have been monitoring what's going on. Now, how were you ever able to get anybody within the organization to be able to tell you what really goes on there? Because everybody's sworn to secrecy, and the man who is giving you the information basically is risking his life to let you know what's going on.
It's men, it's plural. There are several people. Well, actually, I shouldn't say men, because there's actually people, not only men. I think tenacity, how I would describe it. You know, initially people would just literally would not pay any attention to you and blow you off for personal security reasons as well as for any other reason. But then over the years, then, you know, they see you coming every single year. They follow your work a little bit now, especially with the Internet. They can follow what you do a lot more. And then over the years, through tenacity, to try to get these people to open up, to calling them, to talking to them, just to letting them know that, you know, what you are as a human being, you get people to open up, because a lot of the people who attend Bilderberg also have the misgivings, because not all of them are as evil as David Rockefeller's of this world. However, they don't have the natural outlet to get this information out to the people. And when they actually find or come across people such as myself, you know, and if you can, as in my case, establish a close working relationship with some of these individuals who attend their annual meetings, you get some very valuable information. Again, not for personal sake or benefit, I think for the benefit of humanity, because in the end, I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for absolutely everybody's sake, because I think throughout history, the only thing that people have always wanted to do or to be is to be free.
Well, of course, actually, there have been attempts on your life. Haven't they attempted to threaten you or bribe you? Why don't you tell a little bit about that?
Right. Well, in 1996, we found out Bilderberger plans to dismantle Canada, dismember it, and merge the English-speaking part of Canada and the United States into one greater North America, something, incidentally, they have finally achieved 11 years later. Now, all the entire Canadian media let the entire world, or definitely in Canada, know what was going on. Hundreds of thousands of Canadians came out on the streets to protest this supposed illegal breakup of Canada. So again, in 1996, they tried to kill me. I almost walked into an elevator. I was missing a floor. I was literally pulled out of that thing, yanked by my source, who met me in one of the skyscrapers in downtown Toronto. In 1998, they tried to bribe me. In 1999, have me arrested. In 2005, my plane flying from Madrid to Germany was diverted, and I was pulled off the plane in Milan, interrogated for 10 hours before they finally let me go. Last year, I had trouble entering my own country, and they tried to bribe me off and buy me off with a blank check. But, you know, I think the question is, you know, how much does freedom cost? How many zeros would one want to have to be free, not only for my sake, but I think for the sake of generations to come?
Well, I certainly applaud you for what you've done, because what we need are people who are willing to risk it all to try to inform the American people about this group of one of the most powerful groups in the world that most people have never heard of. Now, basically, these are the people then who make the decisions as far as political leaders are concerned. Didn't they actually, of course, pick Bill Clinton to become the president?
Well, it's one of these things that people don't seem to understand. I think one of the reasons that people think it's some kind of a giant conspiracy is because of so much fragile logic one finds on the Internet. Nobody really tells anybody what to do. The way it would work, for example, you know, at the end of January, beginning of February, we have the Davos Economic Forum. Then in March, we have the Trilateral Commission regional meeting. In April, there's a CFR meeting. in May, June, the Bilderbergers meet, and then in September, October, you have the World Bank International Monetary Fund meeting. But nobody is really leading the discussions, but the discussions and the ideas, they kind of flow from one forum to the other, and before you know it, they become the, you know, the central issue, the focal point of European Parliament, which then pass on their decisions to national governments who debate and discuss them. Before you know it, you have the United Nations Army proposal, which was first proposed with the Bilderbergers in 1992, and then in 1996, again, they talked about it in Toronto. In 1998, shortly before the war in Kosovo, they proposed the idea of the Rapid Reaction Force, where you had the 60-man standing army, European standing army, in case of another atrocity, as they called it. And then in 2007 or 2006, shortly after the Bilderbergers met in Canada, a Toronto Star, which belongs to the Bilderberg Club, publishes on the front page of their newspaper, the United Nations is putting together a world army for purposes of protecting the world. And that would be the same way how they would elect potential leaders. Bill Clinton came for the first time in 1991 as a lowly governor of Arkansas. He was invited to Baden-Baden, where David Rockefeller asked him if he knew anything about North American Free Trade Agreement. Or David, Bill Clinton had no idea what North American Free Trade Agreement was, so Rockefeller gave him a master class, and then when he said, great, now what do you want me to do with this? And Rockefeller said, well, we'd like you, for you to support this proposal, and Clinton said, of course, David. And so Rockefeller thrust his hand out and said, thank you, Mr. President. And, well, we all know what happened in 1992.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Daniel Estulin, a fascinating book which we have and which we're, of course, going to stock and carry, and which we would encourage every one of our listeners to get. It is the definitive book on the Bilderberger Group, certainly one of the most influential organizations in the world, because here is where the movers and shakers of the world come together to meet. Well, ordinarily then, on every year, why you are able to get information on what really goes on inside the meetings, information that most other people have never been able to obtain. Would that be a fair statement?
I didn't hear the first part of what you said.
Well, I was saying that certainly you have had an opportunity to talk to the people, members of the Bilderbergers, and at least some of them have let you know what goes on within these meetings, which are actually totally secret. Nobody's supposed to know, but these people have actually tried to use you as a vehicle to get the truth out. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely, and we know that it is true because over the last 12 years or so, my batting average is about 900 points. I think Ted Williams, who is the best player in baseball's history, batted 400. I think batting 900 makes me the best baseball player in the universe. And again, we've predicted everything from the war in Kosovo, which we predicted in 1996, 3 years before the hostilities. In the year 2002, when they met in Chandler, Virginia, we said that the war in Iraq has been postponed until February, March 2003, when the entire world was talking about the immediate conflict taking place in September 2002. We also talked about the oil prices in 2003 going up to about $100 a barrel, when they're about 32 or 33 or 34. Well, we're looking at it right now. We're about at 90, so it's definitely going to go over 100. 2 years ago, we predicted that gold prices would go over $750 an ounce when they're at 425, I believe. Again, we're looking at 750, 770 right now. There's just too many predictions to go around. And again, one of the most terrifying predictions that I made, and unfortunately I was right on it, took place in 2001 when I was shown a secret document by one of the attendees when they were actually talking about child kidnappings as a way to get people to implant microchips. A year later, I believe in the United States, he had this massive kidnappings, and right now in Europe, every country in Europe is experiencing this massive wave of kidnappings.
Well, now, basically, what do they say about the economy, and what do they say about a war with Iran? Do you have any thoughts on either one of those subjects?
Well, I can tell you right now that the war in Iran is definitely off the table. I'll go out on a limb and say this so that people know that when we actually don't have a war, then they'll know exactly why. the European Bilderbergers have basically drawn a line in the sand. They're saying that we're not going to let you go. We now, then, when they're saying they don't mean George Bush. They're talking about the men behind the curtain. I always use an example of Wizard of Oz. If you want to understand who runs the show, as in the Wizard of Oz, you must find the men behind the curtain. And in this particular case, the men behind the curtain are not the American government, but the people, the money people, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, etc., who actually have the money and who make the important decisions on behalf of the world elite, who represent the Bilderberger Club. So again, the Europeans, the French, the Russians, and also the Chinese, who belong to the Trilateral Commission, have drawn this line in the sand and saying, hands off of Iran. They have just too much money invested in the country. You know, there's blood in the water, and you know what happens when there's blood in the water. It usually leads to a good fight, and all of these great nations are taking the gloves off, and they're not going to let the United States invade.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you're right. Certainly that would be a terrible, terrible disaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I asked Daniel about Iran, and he says that the Bilderbergers have told the power elite that they are not to invade Iran, and I hope and pray he's right. I hope that everything we're seeing is just blustering about Iran, and that the people who really pull the strings behind the scenes have let it be known that they're not going to allow an invasion. What did they say about the monetary situation? Certainly it looks like America is headed into an inflationary spiral, and in fact much of the world is headed into an inflationary spiral, which will destroy the value of the currencies.
Exactly.
Are they concerned about that?
Well, not only is it a concern, but it's actually a planned mechanism. Now, about 10 years ago, I saw a phrase. I came across a phrase in the Council on Foreign Relations white paper. They were talking about this thing called demand destruction, quote unquote. Now, I didn't understand the phrase, so I kind of skipped over the phrase and went on reading the rest of the report. I remember that phrase about 5 years later when I came across the same phrase, demand destruction, in a Trilateral Commission report, and then in a Club of Rome report, and then in one of the Bilderberger reports. So I asked a friend of mine who works for the World Bank, what does it mean, demand destruction? And he said to me, well, how do you destroy the demand? I said, well, I don't know, how do you destroy the demand? He said, by destroying the economy. And this is exactly what we're witnessing right now, the wholesale destruction, not only of the United States economy, but Canadian economy, Spanish economy, European economy. And why would they want to destroy the European and world economy? Because poor people don't travel, don't buy things, and this way you are not using the energy supplies which take to make all of these things we buy, all these trinkets and all these things we buy also to travel around the world. And as the oil is a finite resource, we're in a situation right now where the corporations who must have their infinite growth, but they have a limit, and that limit is finite natural resources, finite energy supplies. And when the two butt heads, unfortunately, one has to give way. And this is exactly why we have this wholesale destruction of the United States economy and every other economy in the world, because they must transfer the wealth, as they did in the Great Depression, from the poor people, from us, to them, the wealthy individuals.
And so this is basically then they're going to really undermine the economies both of the Western Hemisphere and of Europe as a means of controlling the population.
But people must understand that the Rockefellers will not be hurt. Just under the Great Depression, the Rockefellers didn't lose any money. Simply was a transfer of wealth from us to them. As is now, the people with a lot of money, they have taken their money out of the housing market a long time ago. And again, as proof of that, last year when I wrote my Bilderberg 2006 report, shortly after their meeting in Canada, I said that one of the Bilderbergers was extremely concerned about the housing situation when he said, what will happen when very shortly people who have a $500,000 mortgage find out that their homes are only worth $100,000. And then Henry Kissinger stood up and he said, we'll just let them burn. And this is exactly what we're witnessing right now. This took place over 1.5 years ago, and the American financial market and the housing market has been utterly destroyed by these people. Canadian financial and housing market is also in a meltdown, free fall. Spain has been destroyed about 1.5 years ago. France has no money. We saw what happened in England with with Northern Rock being declared insolvent and people lining up to take their money out of the bank. Again, this is wholesale destruction, but it is done on purpose. This is not an accident. These people are controlling this financial meltdown, disintegration, for personal gain.
And I think you're absolutely right. In fact, as I see all the information in the newspapers about what's going on, I realize that we would not be reading this unless, of course, they wanted it there. If they wanted to keep it a secret, they would keep it a secret.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
And, of course, they want to focus our attention on it. It's all a matter of perception. As we begin to get concerned, what can we do to protect ourselves? And then, of course, they'll step in, and they obviously have a solution, but it's not going to benefit us. It's going to benefit them. Well, our guest is Daniel Estulin. This incredible story is the true story of the Bilderbergers. It's subtitled, Since 1945, The World's Most Powerful People Have Met in Secret Once a Year Until Now. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Daniel as we explore the background of the Bilderberger movement, because he's, of course, has been researching this on a regular basis. So hang on. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Daniel Estulin. We're talking about his book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. What sort of response did you get there within the mass media? I know you've been in New York, and he certainly has had some television interviews. Have you been able to get on any of the major stations back there?
Well, the closest we came to actually being interviewed by someone important is Amy Goodman. But when we actually came up unannounced into her office, I think she hid it somewhere in the back room at Moon Command. Her secretary told us she was not around, although then she had to admit that she actually was in town. So I think the question is that she just simply would not want to introduce us. Again, people like Amy Goodman, they're your gatekeepers. Their job is to keep people like myself out, to make sure that the people, the regular folks who are actually leading this fight against the oligarchs and against the power elites, actually don't get in and find out the key information which just may help them in this fight for survival of the planet.
And that's why, of course, ladies and gentlemen, it's so vitally important that you out in the listening audience get Daniel's book and, of course, get the audio tapes that we'll have available, and then in a few minutes we'll tell you how to get to his website. Where you can get much more information. But certainly Daniel has come over to the United States on a short tour to try to get the information out. But, of course, with most really important issues. Mind, they are not going to allow this to be on the front pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal, because, of course, all of those organizations are tied into the Bilderberger, as are 95% of the major media outlets in the United States. They're all controlled by the same people. Why? Because that's how they can control what you hear, what you see, what you read, and ultimately what you believe. Would that be a fair statement, Daniel?
No, absolutely. I think the great magician, the great hypnotist of the 20th century, this oblong box everybody has in the corner of their living room called the television set, that tells us what to think, how to dress, how to walk, how to smell, how to talk, what we should think. Most of the time, people, especially in the area of political science, when they believe that the opinions are theirs, are in fact manipulated from behind the scenes by very intelligent, very powerful, and very, very evil individuals who control what we think. The television has become, at the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st, you know, the Bible, it has become the ultimate truth, the gospel. But there are actually two types of gospels. There's the true gospel, and there is what these people have been peddling, which is, again, a type of prison without bars where our opinions are molded and influenced by very, very powerful men.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Daniel Estulin, did his book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. And, Daniel, would you like to, of course, get your webpage out where people would go and get more information on the Bilderbergers?
Thanks. It's www.danielestulin.com.
www.danielestulin, E-S-T-U-L-I-N.com. That's pretty simple. What will people find when they get there?
Well, they find daily analysis of news reports, both in English and in Spanish, lots of photographs, documentaries, videos, interviews, things that people can go to and understand the information which they need to get and to understand in order to be able to fight the evil spirits and the evil individuals who make up the Bilderberger Group, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, because, again, most of the time the opinions that we have are not ours. They've been skillfully imposed upon us by the people from behind the curtain who manipulate the news in their favor and against our wishes, but we just don't quite realize it. So people who read my webpage also have access to links to other webpages which give them important information, which I think will free them from this yoke of the New World Order and the power elites who try to control us.
Well, now, of course, do the people in Europe, the average individual, do they really have some grasp of what's going on? Do they realize that there is this power elite that's really directing the course of Europe and, of course, here in the United States?
Well, I think they do because, again, you know, my book has sold over 1.5 million copies, most of it in Europe. The book has just now been published by Tri-Day in the United States and in Canada. Europeans, generally speaking, are far more skeptical than Americans because I think throughout history they've had to suffer a lot more, personally suffer wars and retributions by the power elites. So they do understand somewhat, but again, not to the extent which I describe and explain in the books, because that just goes beyond the capacity of most people. But again, they are more readily able to admit that these people exist and also accept the information once it has been presented, as I do in my book.
Well, of course, one of the common misconceptions is that communism is the enemy. What's the truth? What's the relationship between the elitists in our country and the Bolsheviks?
Well, I think, you know, the man who understands most about communism is a gentleman by the name of David Rockefeller, although we have been told and taught that people like Karl Marx and Engels and Stalin and Lenin, they seem to be the ideologues of communism. It's in fact David Rockefeller, because to people like him, communism is simply a system of control, and when you control the government by being these men behind the curtain, you control the monopoly, which means that you control absolutely everything. You keep the competition out. That's how the Rockefellers of this world have always liked to work, keeping the competition out and controlling both sides of the equation.
And, of course, that's the beauty of course, producing over in China. You don't have to worry about competition, and anybody there that tries to organize a union, why, you just have them taken out and be shot.
Well, exactly. I mean, David Rockefeller, publicly has stated that he was a great admirer of Mao Zedong. This is a man who killed millions of people. Imagine if somebody came out and said that they were great admirers of Hitler or of Stalin. They'd be crucified. But when David Rockefeller says that he's a great admirer of Mao, no one seemed to mind very much.
Well, of course, you mentioned earlier about, of course, David Rockefeller shaking hands with Bill Clinton several years before he became the Democrat Party nominee. And David Rockefeller said, yes, congratulations, Mr. President. What about Jimmy Carter? What was the relationship between President Carter and David Rockefeller?
Well, I think basically the choices for the 1976 elections were not appetizing to the Democrats or to the Republicans, basically to the men behind the curtain. So the Rockefellers and Alan Greenspan and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who were the founders of the Trilateral Commission, got together with some of the older generation Democrats, and they were looking for ideal candidates. And one of these ideal candidates just happened to be Jimmy Carter, not because he was a good politician, an honorable man, but because he was a crook. And once you're a crook, and once they know that you're a crook, and once they have you in their pocket, they basically control you. And this is the best way to work with politicians, that once you're compromised, you basically do whatever they want you to do, lest you want to be exposed in public. And people like Jimmy Carter's of this world obviously don't have too many problems with ethics, and so he was elected in 76, even though when initially when the campaign started, as you all remember, only 5% of Democrats thought that he was ideal man for the job. That is until Time magazine and New York Times got in on the act, and suddenly, literally overnight, Jimmy Carter became the candidate of choice for the Democrats, and then, needless to say, he won the elections.
And, of course, he was inducted into the Trilateral Commission, surrounded himself with people from David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission, but nothing has changed. It's always the same. Even today, the man who controls George Bush is Dick Cheney, who just comes from the Trilateral Commission.
So well, exactly. One of the things I document in the book, in the section on the CFR, how every president, presidential candidate, and even independent candidates, how all of these top individuals, all of them over the last 60 years have belonged or to the Bilderberger Group, which is the more exclusive of the three, or to the Trilateral Commission, or to the Council of Foreign Relations, or to various combinations of these groups, not only the presidential candidates and the presidents, but secretaries of the Treasury, the judges, the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So basically, we're living in a country where we believe in democracy, but it's just an illusion. These people are not true Democrats. They're professional Democrats making money off of us and making money off of democracy. And again, if you want to get to the top and you don't belong and you don't play the game, you will never, ever get to the top, which is why, again, anybody who is chosen, not elected, but chosen by these individuals has to belong to one of these organizations.
And, of course, this is not simply just the United States. Doesn't this sort of interlock with most of the nations over there in Europe as well?
Exactly. In every nation of the world, for example, Tony Blair was a member of the Bilderberg Club. He came in 1993. Then in 1994, he became the leader of the Labour Party. In 1997, he became Prime Minister. The gentleman who is there right now, Brown, he was also a member of the Bilderbergers several years ago. The people in Spain, all of them belong to the Trilateral Commission, to Bilderbergers as well. In France, you have Bernard Cuchet, who's the founder of Doctors Without Borders, who's now a member of Sarkozy Parliament or Cabinet. He is a member of the Bilderbergers during the last decade or so, as well as a member of the Trilateral Commission. Again, if you look at any one of the politicians in key positions, be they national positions, of course, every Secretary of NATO is also a member of the Bilderberger Club. It makes it much easier to launch wars and wage wars against third world nations when you're given orders by the power elite. So it doesn't matter where you look. The illusion of democracy is just that, an illusion. The power always remains within a very small group of very, very powerful people. And it's inconceivable if you take the United States and it's 300 million people, that the only people who get to be elected to the post of President of the United States are the people who belong to the Bilderberger Club, the Trilateral Commission, or the Council of Foreign Relations. Percentage and probability-wise, it's absolutely impossible and inconceivable.
Now, don't you think that they ordinarily will simply run somebody on the Republican ticket and then somebody on the Democratic ticket, and then we get a choice between the candidate of their choice?
Absolutely. Now, we are given two candidates who are pre-selected by the Bilderbergers or are pre-selected by the men behind the curtain, and we vote on one of them. If you're like men like Barry Goldwater, who did not belong to any one of these organizations, they destroy you by painting you as an extremist. That is exactly how these people work.
And the game has been played over and over again. But nobody tells the American people, and that's why this book is so vitally important today. And so what's the relationship between the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission?
Well, actually, there are three organizations. The Bilderbergers are the more exclusive one of the group. There's about 120, 130 members. It's your NATO alliance, Europe, United States, and Canada. The CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, this is the American division. You'll be an equivalent to the Bilderbergers, but the American branch. There's about 3,000 members, out of which 262 belong to the corporate media. Again, we know why we don't get any of this stuff on national television or in the printed press. And then the Trilateral Commission will be the junior varsity to the CFR. And it's, again, Americas, Europe, and Asia. That's trilateral. It's about 325 members who every 3 years change their leadership council, and the people are in new people are invited into the group. But again, once you're in, you're always in. So even the people who may not attend this year's Bilderberg conference, they still get the Bilderberg report, that is the Bilderberg minutes of the last meeting, who said what and where and what they've decided during the meeting. It's like a big giant mafia conspiracy. Once you're in, you're always in, but it's understood that nobody is allowed to speak publicly about what decisions have been taken or what conclusions have been made, because if they do, they know what will happen to them.
And there'll be terrible, terrible retribution. Well, now, what about China? Because here's one of the great industrial giants of the world today. Soon will be the greatest manufacturing center in the world. And this has all largely been built with money from the United States, from one of our agencies, our corporations, our banks, certainly. So the Europeans have helped out a little bit. Really, China is primarily a product of the United States transferring our wealth halfway around the world, as we move our manufacturing offshore and we impoverish our people. Where do the Bilderbergers fit into China? Are they concerned about it? Are they supporting it? What's this really all about?
Well, initially, if you want to destroy your economy and you need to lower the personal income of people in the United States, you just outsource everything to poor nations such as China, where people work for slave labor costs. I think it's like 25 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour. They work 7 days a week. My brother-in-law is living in China right now, and he said it's just, you know, the conditions are absolutely appalling. People don't have holidays. They get physically slapped every time they do something which they're not supposed to. They get paid about 25, 30 cents per hour. They get day docked if they have to go to the bathroom. But what basically has happened right now is China has become this behemoth, this giant with nuclear warheads. So what you're seeing right now is economic warfare. One of the reasons that the oil prices are as high as they are is they're trying to destroy China's potential by increasing oil prices. And again, everything we have is made with energy, which is oil. In the 1980s, they tried the same strategy with Russia by lowering the price of oil and bankrupting Russia. And they're trying to do the same thing right now with China by raising the oil prices. Again, you have to understand that these people control all the corporations. They control all the presidencies. They control the European Parliament. They control the central banks and they control the corporations, the media. So you can shine the light of truth, as they like to call it, on any issue you wish. And right now, you know, China is the boogeyman, and needless to say, nobody feels very, very comfortable amongst the Bilderbergers with China's unlimited potential.
Well, what about this idea of a new world order? We hear a lot of talk about this idea of a world government under a ruling elite. Where does the Bilderbergers fit into that? Do they support it or oppose it?
Well, it's not really a one world order, because there's been several of one world orders throughout history, going back all the way to the Roman times. This is more of a one world government, where the plan is to have one country, one currency, one army, one constitution. We see it in Europe, where before him we had a European nations, flags, constitutions, currencies, borders, nation states. And what you have right now is one country called Europe, one currency called the Euro, one constitution, which takes precedence over national constitution. You have the European Standing Army, which is called the Rapid Reaction Force, which again, incidentally, the Bilderbergers first discussed in 1992 and became law last year. And now you have the creation of the North American Union, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Yet no one seems to be talking about this, for the exception of one mainstream journalist by the name of Lou Dobbs on CNN. Africa is now also a union, and they're quickly forging partnerships in Asia, so you're going to have the Asian Union over the next couple of years. And when you take these different economic blocks and you fuse them into one, you have what basically these people have been after since the Middle Ages, which is one world government. And if you want, we can talk about how what today is called the Bilderberger Group 600 years ago was called something else, but the idea behind it hasn't changed in all this time.
And I think that's really so important, that these groups, really these ideas passed down from generation to generation. We changed the name of the organization, but the ultimate objective and ultimate goal doesn't change. What was this known group known as in the Middle Ages?
Well, about 600 years ago, it was called the Venetian Black Nobility, or Venetian Nobility. I spent about 2.5 years researching these people in the National Library of Florence, which is one of the most important research libraries in the world, right after the British Museum and the National Archives in the United States. What I found is fascinating read in that the First Nation State was created right after the signing of the Treaty of Florence in 1439, when the eastern and western rites of the church were merged temporarily into one by people such as Pius II, future Pope, and Nicholas of Cusa, representing the western rites, and Father Isidore, representing the Greek church. The First Nation State was created with Louis XI in France and then Henry VII in England at the end of the 1400s and beginning of the 1500s. And what that gave us for the first time in history is natural law, constitution, social welfare, and also a mandate given to the Republic where people for the first time in history stopped being slaves and government started working for the people. And also government had the prerequisite of improving and working on scientific discovery, which improved the lives of all the people in the world. And for the first time in history, about that time, mankind started winning square kilometers of space against nature, and the population, again, for the first time in history, doubled. And if you look at population curves throughout history, and when you see this very steep curve, that's about the time of the creation of the nation states. So for the past 550 years, since 1439, 1440, these people have been after the destruction of nation states and the creation again of oligarchical rule of powerful individuals ruling over the majority of humanity. And again, this is something that Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about in his book, Tetratronic Age, when he said that in near future, the world will be divided into two groups of people, the slaves and the slave owners.
I know. What book was that you're speaking of?
That's called Tetratronic Age, written by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
That isn't the Between Two Ages.
It's the same book.
Right, okay, fine. Yeah, so we think that's such an important book, written in 1970 by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, of the Trilateral Commission of the Bilderbergers. And he is the Democrat, Henry Kissinger is the Republican, David Rockefeller is the guy who controls both of them, and most people have really little idea what's really going on or who really runs the world. But Zbigniew Brzezinski is one of the major architects. The book we're talking about, and which we hope all of you will want to get, which is available from Radio Liberty, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. Fabulous information you're not going to hear elsewhere. The story of the Black Nobility is so important to grasping what's really going on in the world today. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this afternoon's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Daniel, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Okay. I think we still have a lot to do, and I think this fight is far from over. One of the things that people always wish to know when I give my conferences and talks around the world is, what can we do? And I think the most important thing we can do is, first of all, understand how money works and what money can do for us and how we, through money, can hurt these people. Because singing songs, protest songs, and during manifestations, I don't think has ever worked throughout history. Fighting these people, we can never win the fight. They have all the guns. But if we know what to do with money, we can really hurt them. And one of the things that I suggest very strongly is people to please get out of debt and do it now. Don't wait any longer. If you have homes, sell these homes, get the money, take it out, put it in something such as gold or silver, physical gold or silver, not paper gold or silver. And again, learn to live in local communities where if you have money, instead of putting in Chase Manhattan Bank or Citibank, which is going to go and feed the Chinese government and approve the interests of the world elite, put that money in local banks where you know that this money is working for you and supporting the local economy. Again, we must understand how money works and what money can do for us. And if we understand the benefit of this money, we can really, really hurt these people, because more than anything else what they're afraid of is us using our money as a weapon against them.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's so vitally important that people do understand that the other side is vulnerable. everything they do is dishonest. It's done in secrecy. These people are above the law. They think nothing at all about arranging assassinations or manipulating elections. They have no real respect for the Judeo-Christian values, which most of us do embrace. Well, Daniel, we certainly appreciate everything that you've done. We appreciate your courage and the fact that you've been willing to actually hang in there. And I do hope that perhaps we can talk to you again. You have about 40 or 50 seconds. What's your last thought for our listeners?
We will win this war, I think, and I feel, when the power of love, once and for all, overcomes the love of power. And I'd like to leave it at that.
The power of love over love comes the
overcomes
love of power.
The love of power.
God bless. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
And I hope, ladies and gentlemen, you've enjoyed our interview with Daniel Estulin, a very courageous gentleman who's dedicating his life to trying to get the information out. And we hope that you'll utilize his information, get it off his website, and help us disseminate the truth while there is still time. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that many of you have enjoyed the interview with Daniel Estulin. This is the second interview, and those two interviews and one other we've done with Mr. Jim Tucker and are available from Radio Liberty. Jim Tucker is Daniel's partner in this episode and this undertaking, and we'll be putting together a four-tape set, but you can get the three tapes or three CDs now, and they're all different, and they're all fascinating. Now, if you'd like to get the book, The True Story of the Bilderberger Group, it is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to get the tapes or the CDs of my interviews with Daniel, which gives you an excellent overview of what we've been talking about and why they are available at the same number. And then, of course, ladies and gentlemen, certainly the Bilderbergers are simply part of this whole spiritual force working behind the scenes. How do you maintain this movement? As Daniel talked about, the black nobility in the 14 and 1500s working for exactly the same goal that the Bilderbergers is today. And well, we could go back 5,000 years. There have always been secret societies or semi-secret organizations working behind the scenes, energized by a spiritual force. And this is how it's been able to continue, generation after generation after generation. And, of course, the ultimate goal is a one-world government, a one-world religion with the destruction of Christianity, and, of course, a one-world ruler who will be the Antichrist. And that is the driving force behind this whole incredible movement, even though many of the people involved have no idea what this is about. This is why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk, a more recent talk called The Forbidden Secret. It comes with a syllabus. If you want to understand finances and certainly how to protect yourself because we're going into an economic tailspin, you want to get my talk on the financial tsunami, and be sure to get the syllabus with it, which just comes at a reduced cost. But you want to know how to access the information from the Federal Reserve Board and see what they've been doing to us. And then, of course, if you request, why, we can send you several of our newsletters. Financial Collapse 1, Financial Collapse 2 are posted on our website of RadioDiverty.com. Financial Collapse 3 will be up there, hopefully within a week and a half or so. And then, of course, Financial Collapse 4, I'm in the process of writing, to explain to you why they are intent upon destroying our economy and how this may be the best possible thing that we can do. And as terrible as it's going to mean for many, many people and the destruction of the life savings of people, it may give us an opportunity to save America, because you have to understand that we could have all the money in the world and lose our freedom. It would mean nothing. Freedom is the most precious possession that God could give us other than his own love. And remember, where the spirit of the love is, the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. We're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like to get the items we've mentioned, the book, The Bilderbergers, the interviews with Daniel Estulin and with Jim Tucker, and then, of course, if you'd like to get our our talk on the forbidden secret, or the secret behind the secret, or the secret mysteries of America's beginning. It is all basically about these same secret societies. They've always been here. And, of course, their ultimate goal. They feel is within their reach now, but if we allow this to happen, then freedom as we know it will become a nightmare, and everything that our men have fought and died for through the years will simply have been for naught. If you care about America, if you care about our future, if you care about your freedom, if you care about your children, then join us in this epic struggle. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com, where you can pull down our newsletters. You can pull down many of the videos we've produced for nothing. You can certainly listen to our programs there for nothing. You can listen to the archive programs, the live programs, the MP3 programs. And then please pray for America. Pray for